Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best, too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Welcome, all the best people I know. Yes, look in the mirror. That would definitely be you. You're the best. You're the best listeners, and we also have the best guest. Today we have Adriana Larkin, and it's all about reinvention, igniting that sacred fire within you at any age. You are going to love this topic. I know a lot of people we have listening are in that age group, and actually reinvention at any age is always a good thing. So embracing the change is what we're going to find out how to do today. But before I read the beautiful bio for Adriana, I wanted to remind you that if you go to greenskyandbluegrass.com, which is my website, and you go to the front page right corner, you'll see a nice green box there that has Motivation Monthly News. And if you enter your information, I'll be happy to get you the newsletter, which will have a listing of all our guests for the entire month. And then if you want those worry-free updates, you can like us and follow us on the BTR homepage, and they'll send you the worry-free updates, because we have so many awesome people to bring you, and we don't want to miss any opportunity to be our best. For example, today is our second show because we had Dr. Meg Meeker on earlier this morning talking about the 10 Habits of Happy Mothers, and now we're going to reinvent ourselves at any age with Adriana Larkin. So thank you, thank you, thank you for making the show top in the 1-2% in so many categories. Without you, we wouldn't have a show, so thank you for keeping us going and growing. Well, let's read Adriana's bio and bring her on air, and she will be happy to take your questions at 347-637-1318, 347-637-1318, or you can type them in the chat. Adriana Larkin, for those who don't already know her, she is author of Igniting the Sacred Fire, Reinventing Yourself at Any Age. And in this book, she shares her personal story of reinvention to a full-time entertainer. And she did this at the age of 50 against all odds and in the midst of great personal crisis. And let me tell you, very, very severe crisis. She had a failed family business. She had dual employment. She had bankruptcy, foreclosure, things that many of us can identify with today, what's going on in the world. But her message is one of hope and inspiration. I'm going to take a quote here from her. So many of us, myself included, received messages when we were young from well-intentioned parents and teachers telling us that we could not have what we wanted, that we needed to reach for a less lofty goal or seek a career other than the one we would choose for ourselves. As a result, most people believe their dreams have some sort of expiration date. Yet it has been shown time and time again that we are drawn toward and inspired by the very things which we have some skill or natural ability that we can leverage for our greatest successes. We now understand the role that happiness plays in our performance at work, our physical well-being, our relationships, and our longevity. Still, we have a tendency to overlook the two options for creating that happiness: reframing our present circumstances or using the power we already own to create new ones. And Adriana encourages all of us to use both of these, and she gives us many tools in her book to assist us in achieving this. Adriana beautifully demonstrates that nothing is an accident, that we can all overcome and recognize and welcome our true purpose, that the unlimited potential exists within each of us to share the sacred fire within. And if you go to the Sacred Fire Within, you will find Adriana Larkin's beautiful website, her phenomenal book. I have it right here in my hands. It's absolutely fabulous. And it is a pleasure to introduce Adriana Larkin. How are you today, Adriana?
I'm doing very well, Deb. And thank you so much for allowing me to be a guest on your show. I love the title of your book, by the way.
Well, you know, titles of books, they, you know, there could be a book just on how people pick the titles of their books. I mean, really, they're,
you're right.
I love book titles, and I like the cover of the book. And, you know, it just is so, I tell you, it's amazing to me that for $10, $20, $30, we can get all of this wisdom. I mean, we cannot possibly live somebody's life 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, 60, 70, 80 years of it. But to be able to read a book and get all that wisdom and knowledge of someone's personal journey, wow, that is a bargain. And I tell you, your book is quite a journey. And I love the title of your book. I love the format. There's a boarding pass in case anybody wants to know before you enter each chapter, which is great. It's really an adventure. And, you know, since I read the book, I know what igniting the sacred fire within is, but do you want to share with listeners the definition for sacred fire?
I would love to. Sacred fire has been a term that's been around for a while, and the thing that's most intriguing about it, it began as the title of a song for me, because as my book explains, I began as a singer-songwriter. Music has been one of those things that kind of was a recurring theme all woven through my life and the different jobs I had. I always did music on the side, and I was a singer-songwriter, and I wanted a theme for this really powerful anthem that I was creating for a movie. It was originally going to be part of a movie score. And when I really looked at something that was universally understood, the book talks about how all this came about, sacred fire was the term that was found across timelines, across landmass, across, it resonated with a certain understanding of what it was. The Polynesians referenced it. The Vestal Virgins of ancient Rome had a sacred fire that they tended. The Native Americans tended it. The Celtic clans and later, you know, their earlier descendants, the Druids, really, were the ones who originated that concept. But sacred fire actually is probably best envisioned as that Kundalini energy. And you can find references to that in Indian Sanskrit text, but it's that energy source, that really powerful, pervasive kind of energy that will start at the base of your spine and eventually, you know, follow the course of the chakras on up and out and really give us our juice, our spark, our life force. And each of us has some sort of something, a dream, something we like to do. Maybe it's an inherent talent or skill, but it's a cardinal piece of that life force, and that is our sacred fire.
And, you know, really, for those that haven't already read the book, and you can find out more about it on Adriana's website and get it, it's really a book that has exercises in it. You have some web links in it. You have, you know, some really great challenge questions. But I think anybody who is trying to reframe their life, you know, that sacred fire, we all have it. And you start out your book talking about, hey, maybe you just, you know that you need a change or that something's calling you, but maybe you don't know what your purpose is. Maybe you're going through, you know, some of the catastrophes that I was reading about in the beginning in the bio. I mean, people everywhere, no matter who you are, you have some sort of a challenge in life. I mean, that's part of the human condition. But the great news is that there's an opportunity to reframe that, to reinvent, to put that picture in a different frame so that it can really not only look different but be different. Do you want to talk a little bit about your own personal journey? Because, I think that you have to read the book to really understand it all. But just so that listeners can identify with you and understand that you're just like the rest of us, and you know the best is yet to come.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I would love to do that. When my book opens, actually, half of the book is my personal story, so you have a backdrop of how I got from there to here. And the second half is really about finding the 11 steps along the way that were really beneficial to me. Now, for somebody else, it may be a different set of 11, or it may be 5 of those 11, but these were things that I see as recurring themes, really, in almost anyone's evolution, and they keep showing up in different orders and different ways, and I wanted people to be aware of them. I invite people to take this book, my story, and make it their own. I actually wrote this for people in their mid-50s who might be facing career challenges, health challenges, things of this nature, but I find that 20-somethings have benefited from the story in the book, because when it comes down to it, we're all human. And my story basically opens up when I was still a very harried business owner. I owned a custom frame shop and fine art gallery with my husband that also not only employed him, but my son and his fiance. The four of us managed a family business. It had its ups and downs. For the most part, we did really well, and then we went through kind of a great dip. And I was on the pinnacle of something else. I had actually acquired an angel investor. I was looking at writing a record number of commercial accounts. I was being certified as a female-owned business. It would grant me the opportunity to write for government contracts. And things were really looking very positive. And all this while, I was working on myself because I was trying to reduce the stress in my life. And I hired a personal coach, a very talented man by the name of Joe Nunziata. I'll always give him credit for a pivotal awareness that I had. But he said, when are you going to realize? He said, the heart of all this, you're still a musician. You're still an entertainer. And he says, I really hope that you will declare it. And my argument at that time was, oh, I think I'm too old. That ship has already sailed. And he says, that's garbage. He says, you need to declare it. Well, I did that. And a funny thing happened. Some people will call it the banking industry collapse.
Yeah.
For me,
yeah.
I think it was a bit more of a meant-to-be sort of thing. But what happened is that nexus aligned with some integral things that were happening within the industry. And the end result was that within 3 weeks, I saw a freeze on my commercial accounts, my angel investor pulled out, a loan that I was supposed to get to help reorganize the business, you know, dried up completely. Nobody was lending money. All my customer accounts froze. There was a new president coming in, so in 2009, so the government contracts were even on hold. And I just kind of watched as everything started to circle the drain. People who would have been interested in buying the business couldn't get financing, so we closed up shop. And because we had such heavy personal assets leveraged against the business, we filed a personal Chapter 7 to clear the debt. My husband was unemployed along with me, and the bank, which was also leveraged against our house, our house was also leveraged against the business, went back to the bank. And, you know, as this started to swirl, something amazing happened. Because of the work that I had done in just first trying to relieve the stress, what I started to gain was an incredible awareness that as things go away, sometimes it's the perfect opportunity to incorporate change. When something leaves, nature abhors a vacuum, so it will begin to fill it with something else. Now, here's the cardinal thing that we need to realize. We can choose what to fill that with. We can choose what to fill that space with. That space is not empty. It's just a placeholder for whatever you choose to bring in its place. And yeah. Go ahead.
No, you know, and I think that really you talk a lot about, you know, the obstacles, and I'm listening to you and I'm like, my heart's going down. I'm saying, oh, man, pain. And I think that people can identify with that, and that is the human condition. That's probably why 20-somethings love your book just as much as the 50-somethings, because there are certain inherent qualities. I think that's why you can, you know, read Shakespeare or things that were written hundreds of years ago and still, you know, get that emotional, that feel, that message, because there are certain things that are inherent in all ages throughout time that all people seek. And I think, you know, you really get to that in The Sacred Fire, talking about we all want to find that, and that sacred fire and that purpose, and knowing that no matter what happens to us, everything can be used. I love that. It's a placeholder. You know, we can always find something, you know, good coming out of those things that we don't like. And sometimes what we want, what we need, you know, we have to pay attention and open. But, you know, you really talk a lot about getting over those fears. And I'm just wondering if I could kind of fast forward a little bit about how you help someone who may be listening, who may be feeling, you know, well, that's okay for Adriana, but, you know, I can't possibly, you know, do what she's talking about. I can't possibly have the strength to, you know, well, in your case, your music talent and some of those things. I mean, what do you say to somebody right now that really is in a place of being dissatisfied in that fear column versus the satisfied on the love end of the spectrum?
Yeah, that's a good point. And fear is such such a driving force against us making our change that we need to make. The thing about it is there's five things I found that hold people back. One is they don't know what they want to do, so we won't make any change because I don't know what I want to do. I have to have all the plan in place. First of all, I want to let folks know that you have already reinvented yourself so many times, perhaps, that you weren't even aware of. In fact, if you made it from birth to puberty, you've had several reinventions, as you did basic things like learn to walk, learn, you know, get through school, learn hobby or a craft, or learn to play a sport or a piece of music. All of that is a reinvention process. Anytime you learn something new, you've taken a portion of who you are and you've reinvented it. So reinvention to us, first of all, is nothing new. And at those times when you were a child and very open and trusting, you had that thought that, you know, it's okay if I make mistakes. It's okay if I fall down. It's okay if I, you know, don't succeed the very first time I tried that. You get up and you try it and you do it again. And that's the most cardinal piece that I want people to understand. It's okay to make mistakes in this process. You don't have to be perfect. And guess what? You weren't before when you did it then.
Yeah, the perfection thing. Yeah. Gee, you know, the idea that somebody else is perfect, somebody else has the answer, somebody else is exempt from the business of living. You know, I don't know where we were buying that lie, but that talk about being upside down, that's insane because, you know, every single person, you know, has something. And I love your example about, hey, you've already done it. You've already reinvented yourself, you know. If you make it through puberty, you've already been there and done that. So that's good. Do you want to talk about the other steps that, you know, because you mentioned the four, but do you want to talk a little bit more about them?
Absolutely. There was, you know, the one, I don't know what I would like to do, so I can't do anything. My thought would be try something, you know, but there are those who know what they want to do, but they don't know how to do it. Now, we live in the age of information. So most of us, if we just start Googling things, a lot of times we can count that as our research and we can start to get some awareness of the how of it all. You know, and then there's a third scenario where I know what I want to do and I think I know how to do it, but circumstances aren't really good for it right now. You know, my thought around that is we can always use that excuse. There can always be better circumstances, but just like before, we don't have to have all the pieces in place. We just need to be able to cross the threshold. The fourth one that's most common is I know what I want to do, I know how to do it, and I know that, you know, circumstances could work for it right now, but you know what? I'm just too comfortable.
Yeah.
I've got this house, I've got this, you know, car, I've got this set of circumstances, and I really don't want to make any change. Well, that's great if you're happy, but if you have that restlessness brewing, or the other thing I tell people to be aware of, if you're having health problems, you might not be as comfortable as you think you want to be or are. The fifth one then around that is basically all the things I mentioned above. You know what you want to do. You know how to do it. You think you can do it under these sets of circumstances, and you're willing to take some risk, but you know what? It's selfish.
Oh, yes, boy. I bet you there's somebody listening right now that says, I've heard that before.
It's selfish. I will tell you, if you choose to reorder your priorities, to make your livelihood or some aspect of your livelihood or just spend more time on a hobby that you love, that is never selfish. First of all, you're going to be a happier person, and most likely the people that you live with will be happier as well. And not only that, this internal kind of happiness that creates an elevated vibration in us, and we're learning a lot about vibration since The Secret, is teaching us that, you know, we have this kind of ripple effect. When we're happy and the people around us are happy, Think of it as concentric circles that go out from there. Those people are going to make other people happy, and those people are going to make other people happy. And pretty soon, we're doing our craft and our passions from our heart. And I tend to think that there's not much room for greed or despair or some of the angst that we have right now, if indeed we're acting from our heart.
And, you know, really, it does make it unselfish to be your best, because if you don't enjoy your own company, you can't expect anybody else to. And, you know, that creative part that we all have, if we don't nurture that, the rest of us is starved. You know, it's like eating spiritual popcorn. It doesn't really feed the soul, and it can't really ignite that sacred fire that you talk about. And, you know, the other thing that I love is you talk about, you know, different signs. For example, and I know that you're a radio host as well, but I think that people listen to this show for, you know, it's like a divine intervention. I don't think it's an accident. And you talk in your book about trust that you receive the answer and will be given the next step whenever it is most appropriate for your highest good. And you give the example even of a book. You know, why, if there's hundreds of books in a bookstore, why would you pick up the one that you picked up? Or, for example, reading your book, you know, why did I pick that one up to read? And looking at the things that we do almost as a third party, as an observer, and seeing that as a sign for what our purpose is, you know, what we're seeking, what we need, what we have as a talent to give. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that and some ways to kind of pick up what your purpose is, what that sacred fire is, and why things are happening in your life to ignite it?
Absolutely. You know, I love that you used the book example, because actually if you weren't going to bring that up, I would.
I love that part.
Yeah, because almost everybody I know who loves books the way you and I do will describe that instance where this book just fell off the shelf. You know, I don't know, I was drawn to it. It seemed to have a light around it. I don't know, it just grabbed me. I saw the cover and I knew I had to have it. We've all had that feeling. That feeling, and that is, you know, actually listed as the first of the 11 steps. What are you feeling? We've gotten so much into our head that we, you know, and relying on experts, that we have forgotten our own innate divine wisdom. Everybody has intuition. I always laugh when I hear somebody describe themselves as a natural-born psychic. Okay, we're all natural-born psychics. We all are. We all have that intuition. It's just to what degree you have become comfortable with it and you've cultivated it. But we're all inherently. I don't know one person that I've ever had this conversation with on this planet who has said, I've never had anything mystical happen to me that I couldn't explain.
Yeah. No kidding. Isn't that something? You know, it really is. It is the irony of life, isn't it? That we tend to think somebody else knows better what we should be than us. It's like, hello, has anybody else been me on planet Earth before? No. So why am I letting somebody else tell me what I think? You know,
exactly.
It's totally upside down. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And I think that really when we don't trust ourselves, you know, in working with and dealing with the issues of recovery, I mean, you know, so many people have those dark secrets, whether it's child abuse or whether it's, you know, people's family alcoholism. I mean, it doesn't have to be that drastic, but, you know, a lot of people have junk that they want to dump, you know, and those things that create wrong wiring in our brains. And I know you even talk about Dr. Bruce Lipton in your interviews with him and the mind and all that neuroplasticity and so forth. But the idea that we kind of go to upside down thinking boot camp and then we don't trust our own intuition because we see things that don't make sense, but maybe an outside authority figure told us, oh, everything's okay, even though, you know, your mother's dragging your drunk dad upstairs. Oh, dear, everything's fine. And you're looking, saying, wait a minute, this doesn't look fine. Something's totally wrong here with this picture.
Yeah.
Wrong. And so, that intuition gets turned off, and you talk about really getting it turned back on. Because if we don't trust ourselves, you know, it's hard to really move into that place that you talk about in Sacred Fire. So, you know, the 11, I'm just going to read for somebody listening. You talk about, one, acknowledging your feelings. Two, awakening to rebirth. Three, observe and understand. Four, truth. Five, courage. Six, authenticity. Seven, responsible commitment. Eight, self-love and forgiveness. Nine, loving service. Love that. 10, this is my favorite, surrender and trust. And 11 is gratitude. You know, I don't mean to jump too fast forward or give it away, because you got to get the book to really do the exercises, go on the journey, enjoy your own company. Adriana is going to be your best friend that holds your hand to help you discover how awesome you truly are. But, you know, I really think that surrender, I think that that is super key. How did you get to that point yourself? And tell us the benefit of surrendering.
You know, I got to that point. Is what preceded the book actually was the album that it accompanied the title Sacred Fire, but it was the album that was supposed to be the theme song for the movie. I tell the story how the movie got put on hold for budgetary sorts of things. But what I realized as I was crafting these 11 songs, there were these 11 steps, and that's kind of what I had used for my own growth process, and that's what evolved out of the book. Surrender and trust were things that I really, even now, that seems to be my sticking point. We all have something that kind of completely trips us up, and I keep having to go back and do the little affirmations in the pep talk and say, you know, it's going to be okay. I got this far in this moment. I'm well fed. I have a roof over my head. I am in great health. I have a partner who loves me. Everybody I know is well cared for, and that's a great place to be. I mean, sometimes coming into surrender is just being aware of where you are in that moment. And unfortunately, what so many times breeds and grows and magnifies our anxieties is what happened to us in the past. It could happen again, or what we think lies as part of our future. But really and truly, and there's so much truth in this, I've heard it said over and over again, the power is in the present. And it's really that present momentness that gives us the ability to surrender. I don't think we can surrender in the future. We can worry about the future. We can say, I'm not going to worry about it now. But surrendering really comes into the moment and saying, in this moment, I'm okay. In this moment, I have all that I need. And if most of us look at their situations and what we really worry about, you know, all of those worries tend to be future-oriented or experiential as far as what happened to us in the past that could recur. You know, I have had bad relationships. I'm just going to have bad relationships. What if this one turns out like the last one? In reality, what we need to do is surrender to where we are right now. And being where we are right now might be being okay by ourselves and not being in a relationship.
Isn't that something, huh? Like, let's have a good relationship with me first before I go out and try to bring somebody else into it. Or thinking that somebody else, excuse me, I was just moving the headset there, or thinking that somebody else is going to complete us, you know, and that really is the premise of Sacred Fire that, you know, and this is what I love, all this stuff on the outside, you know, all these things that are on the outside that we don't take when we go to the other side and leave planet Earth, you know, we tend to buy what people are saying buying the lie, you know, that the outside stuff is going to give us the inside happiness. Now, there's an upside down idea, right? And you focus on how to change that and reframe it. And it's all about that reinvention and embracing that change and surrendering to that. But, you know, maybe you have some more examples that you'd like to give from your own life, because I find that listeners really can see themselves in the story of the guest, and then maybe some other examples that you'd like to share of the before and after, that if we apply the tools from the journey that you share in the book, what can we expect? You know, what are some of the surprises that we might experience?
Well, I want to go back to something you said just a moment ago about what the lies that we've embraced that have been told to us by others. You know, and I actually reference this in the third step when we start to observe and understand what we're supposed to begin to observe and understand is how much programming we have received. You know, and I use the example of a baby being able to hear in utero. We know that now. They can hear this mother's voice, father's voice, and it picks up the energies. But if you think about it, that programming starts even before we're born. You know, we get some sense of our parents' values, their belief systems, everything that is there forming their reality, and we get that before we even leave the womb. Now, here's the funny thing. If we look at what's actually happening there, those people, much of who they are, began when they were in the womb, as did those before them. So we're talking about a whole lineage of experiences, that we values and viewpoints that we come into this world with, most of which aren't even our own. Now, we'll, of course, go along and gather our own and our own experiences, and those will be layered. But how, you know, what the thing that I want people to understand is much of that will be framed in the context of what we were told even before we're born. One of the things I grew up hearing is, money doesn't grow on trees. You have to work hard for everything you have. You know, we're not lucky people. You know, we have to work and struggle and claw and survive. And it was this sense of having to just apply yourself and keep your nose to the grindstone. And I know I'm not the only one who heard that. It's just to what degree it was emphasized. And it was emphasized pretty heavily in my house. You know, here's the funny thing. I wanted a career in the arts. I initially thought I wanted to be an actress, and I had an affinity for musicals, and I already sang, and there were so many things that seemed to work in that favor. It came very easy for me. But I was told by my father I would be a nurse because I would starve as an actress. You know, in my mind, that hung with me. I could not have an entertainment career because I would starve. I'd never eat again. Funny thing is, it took a bankruptcy and a financial meltdown. I was like, well, if I'm going to go hungry, I might as well do it, doing what I want. And, you know, it kind of, that's the reframing that I talk about. You know, you kind of start to say, is this really true? That's where your truth comes in. I see a number of actors and actresses. Actually, I know that there are some who by choice will tend to look very skinny, but I don't think that they're starving. I don't think that in reality anybody on primetime television or who, you know, grosses 20 or more at the box office is really starving. I don't think that's a prerequisite for having to acquire your art. But unfortunately, those are so many times the types of messages that we receive. Now, because we're having to work hard, we discount anything that could be easy for us. And that's what I try to tell people when I'm helping people understand where their sacred fire really lies. We get clues along the way. What is a natural ability for you? What do you enjoy doing? What do people compliment you on? What seems to come easy to you that other people struggle with? A lot of times that is an early warning sign of what could be a sacred fire.
And, you know, I think that those types of tips are really important because we do some, you know, it just because you're, whoever's listening, you do something really great. It's a natural talent to you. You take it for granted that everybody else probably can do the same thing, and that's not necessarily true. So I do think that when people compliment you and say, wow, you do that really well, that's a really good sign to pay attention to. You know, talking about this journey, I like the way you describe yourself in the 20s, when you were in the 20s, and you talk about resiliency and all of those things. How do you view yourself from the 20s, 30s, 40s, and now in the 50s? How would you, could you share something about that? Because I found that fascinating.
Yeah, I think they, especially in a youth-oriented society, there's a lot of messages that, you know, we're all walking around with expiration dates, sort of. When you're 20s, you're expected, and it's understood, you'll be very resilient. You may make your mistakes more frequently. You may, you know, fall down that much more, but you'll be okay. You'll get up, dust yourself off, and go on. You have all these opportunities in front of you. You know, by 30s, well, you should be settling down with a family. You have a few less opportunities. By the time you're 40, your value is declining yet more. And by the time you're 50, you might as well just hang it all up. There's no hope for you.
Yeah, and then menopause. menopause starts kicking in, and it's like, oh, that's fun. You know, that's another challenge.
I had a big fear of turning 50, and that's outlined in this book as well. And then I made peace with it. I'm like, man, this is like the best decade ever. My children are grown and on their own, and my parents are still kind of like well and healthy, and everybody's doing okay. And, you know, this is pretty darn awesome. I'm kind of digging this. We have been fed, again, so many messages. It's so much a part of our programming that we lose value as we get older. We buy into that. We discount our own wisdom. When I think back on it, I'm really no less resilient than I was in my 20s. The only difference is I now have more resources based on my experience. And I haven't had to really exchange one for the other. But in the same token, because I have those resources, because I have that experience, because I have the knowledge of where the pitfalls are, I'm not making the mistakes. I'm not falling down as much as I was. So, of course, I'm not going to feel like I'm picking myself up as often. It's just a different perspective.
And a very inspiring one at that. You know, something else, and I just want to make sure we touch on it before we run out of time, because I like the way you talked about it. We have a lot of, you know, law of attraction lovers out there and people with The Secret. You know, that's just been a really big topic. Well, you just manifest it and then it'll come and all that. But you have some things to say about that. Do you wanna share about that? Because I found that pretty interesting, the way you talked about the other side of it, sort of like, okay, yeah, there's this one side, but let's talk about the rest of the story there and how that fits into igniting the sacred fire and reinvention.
First of all, I love The Secret. I don't have anything to diss on The Secret, because I think it did a lot of good as far as opening people's eyes to a wonderful way of being that needed to have happen. We needed to become a little more aware of, you know, just embracing things that we didn't always understand and realizing how much power we truly have. The issue that I have with The Secret as it stands is, I think when in the final edits, and I don't think, you know, Rhonda Byrne, the creator, really had this vision when she, you know, released it. I think it was just the formulaic processing that all creative arts go through, is that what really got eliminated from The Secret is the message of how that power comes into be. We think The Secret presented as though you can just, you know, focus on something, say it over and over again, and envision it, and you'll manifest it sooner or later. And if that's not happening for you, you're doing something wrong. Here's the idea. What really gives us our own power is our own ability to be happy. And the shortest distance between two points from where we are to be happy is through the act of doing those things we love. And what I have found in my own experience, as well as those that I have observed, is the more we are doing what we love, the easier manifestation comes about.
I like how you say that. I found that very, very enlightening. And, you know, I think for anybody that's feeling, and we talked about it in the beginning of the show, like, well, you don't have time for this, or, you know, I can't do that, or you talk about your dad with, oh, well, you know, you have to be the nurse because you can't make a living. You know, really, your journey and your own personal experience says otherwise, that the only way you will be happy, the only way that you will be able to be successful, you know, with who you are, is to feed your soul, to release those creative talents, and to really surrender to that in a positive way. And the whole journey is really quite hopeful. And the idea that all those things, the bad things that happen, I guess we would define them by society standards as bad thing, the financial, the, you know, a divorce, whatever, those things really are signposts to say, hey, no, don't take that right turn, go over here and take a left. Or, you know, take this route. And it's all an opportunity to change course and embrace the change, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Change, as I mentioned before in our conversation, gives us a chance to expand or contract. If we embrace change, We will expand. We'll gather new experiences. We'll travel to new places. We'll make new friends. If we resist change and we work at keeping that sameness in place and we don't want to be moved out of our comfort zone, we're going to contract and constrict. And it's not going to be a situation where we become more happy by keeping things the same. We'll be less happy. So I invite you to change, your listeners, to change just one thing in their life and see what shows up as a result of that.
Yeah, because don't be afraid of change. Be afraid of staying the same. That's the scary part.
It really is.
You know, and you talk and you say, there's a physical reason for that discomfort, and it is temporary. As long as you continue to challenge the discomfort with repetition, which, you know, is interesting. It's sort of like recycling the unhappiness. So, you know, who needs to do that? And reinvention and reframing and, you know, I think that the premise is that if we're not changing, we're dead. You know,
yes.
we can't, if we, it's like the ready, set, grow or go, you know, or, you know, you say it in a different way. But, you know, is there something, because I'm looking at the time and I know we're running out of it. Is there some sort of final thought, or what is it that you want a listener to take away or take as hope, or if somebody's really in a place where they're saying, oh gosh, you know, I'm not happy about being 50, or I don't know if there's still time and all of these things. What do you want to leave a listener with?
I would like them to invite to think about whatever they would do if time, money, age, or experience were not standing in their way. Because once you know that, you have a good clue to your sacred fire. And then I invite them to live as though none of those things exist. Time, money,
wow.
Age, and experience.
And you've done it, and it works. So how do people get in touch with you and what you're doing next and, you know, all of those good things? And did you have something that you wanted to share about your name change? Because
yes.
I think it kind of fits in with the reframing, right, in reinvention theory.
It certainly does. My website actually right now is www.adriannalarkin.com. It is my first and last name. That is actually a stage name. And as I am continuing to evolve, what I realize is most authentic for me right now is to leave behind or retire the stage name that I crafted so many products of. That was my only reason for keeping it, and return to my legal name of Nancy Harold. You'll be seeing more about that on the website. AdriannaLarkin.com is still the area where you can reach me. It will be linked eventually to a sister website that's being developed called Sacred Fire Living. And we'll be talking just about that, what we touched on, being very authentic, how we continue to grow and evolve and expand and reach for new heights, because this is a wonderful, wonderful journey to be on.
Wow. And I love that you're always reinventing yourself, and you're always looking at things as happening at the right time for the right reason. And you really live your life without judgment. And I think that's why you're able to embrace the change and, you know, using these steps, I guess, this is why you've written the book. This is why you're sharing all of these things, because they work, they have been working for you and continue to work, and you're not finished yet, right?
Right. I'm not finished. And I want people to know I'm not always comfortable with the growth of the process. It does create a certain amount of discomfort. But I think what you learn after a certain while is that just means you're doing it right.
Wow. Well, listen, you are doing it right. And thank you for helping us to really embrace growing and going and making a difference. And you know nobody else has been us, so don't let somebody else tell you who you're supposed to be. And
absolutely.
I can hear the little BTR lady telling us that we're out of time, but igniting the sacred fire, reinventing yourself at any age, and you can go to adriannalarkin.com right now. And we'll still be looking forward to seeing Nancy Harold too. So that's
I appreciate
okay.
it.
But thank you so much for sharing your shine with us, Adriana. We love what you're doing and helping us to be the best, because you know, everybody, if everybody's their best, everybody else that we meet will be their best too, and that's how we all continue to help each other. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you to all the listeners. Thank you whether you're listening live or on iTunes, and you can go to iTunes and download the show to your mobile device. And I just want to let you know that we're over 21,000 listeners now in a short amount of time, and that's all due to you keeping us going and growing and sharing the show with a friend. So, in the famous words of Oscar Wilde, go out and be yourself, because everybody else
is already
taken. Thank you for listening
to the Best People We Know radio show with your host, Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking, and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.